Okay, so this is Mark Gibbons. I'm interviewing Dexter Roberts in regard to Ed Leahy. It's September 3rd, 2012, Labor Day. And Dexter, what's your first recollection of Ed, your first memory? Where did you first meet, or do you remember what that was like, the first time you encountered him?
Yeah, in the 60s. Here in Missoula at the university, and he was an activist under the influence of a couple of guys from Students for a Democratic Society, Paul Warwick and Denny Bluen, who didn't do Ed any good. They got him doing risky things that, you know, he might or might not have done by his own volition. But anyway, he ended up, and it went on, and he ended up turning back his draft card, which people did. That was the early 70s. That's 5 years later. Throwing your draft card into a hat and have it carted away so you are no longer an object of interest to selective service, the military.
Do you remember some kind of major demonstration on campus? Were you there at that time? When they occupied the ROTC building or something?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was there for that when we occupied ROTC.
And Ed was involved in that?
I think so. I didn't have... I was in direct touch with some student friends of mine, and we didn't know exactly who else was involved. I'll bet he was, but the very first one was the result of the realtor downtown putting out a photograph of Martin Luther King and known communists in a touched-up photograph. So this Denny Bluen fellow, first what did he do? He nailed to the door of the administration building demands of every known kind for student power, and then led a bunch of people down there to this realty office and occupied that office. Went right inside and sat down and wouldn't get up. I was a wary participant in that group and made sure I didn't get arrested the way several people were and put in jail overnight. But I was there giving my support, and Ed was. And so that was a side of him, which was a very fiery Irish spirit. He was really Irish. If there ever was anyone who was Irish, it was Ed Leahy.
Did he go to jail? Huh? Was Ed put in jail for that? He was.
I don't know.
I think he was one of the people that went to jail.
Probably. I'd say probably. I don't know who. Exactly who ended up in jail, but 25, 30 people.
Yeah.
But the notable thing, and more important thing in a way, was his voice, the way he read poetry. Mm-hmm. I never heard anybody read poetry any better. And that includes the famous ones from around here, like Dick Hugo and so forth. God, could he read poetry?
Yeah, I've heard almost everybody that I've ever heard make a comment about it have said the same thing.
Yep.
They've never heard anybody read poetry any better, including Dylan Thomas.
Huh. Dylan.
That's a compliment, I guess.
God, Dylan. Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. He did A Child's Christmas in Wales. It was a wonderful, long narrative.
Did you...
But Dylan Thomas was so self-destructive. Jesus.
Yeah, well, and of course, that was a bit of a part of Ed's personality, too, from what I can gather.
Often
did
in
you
the,
witness any of that? Or
in the poet? Oh, yeah, but it went... Not when I knew him early. He was very jolly and loved to read his poetry, which he did extremely well. He went out and took some kind of teaching job in Minnesota for a while. And that was for about a year. And then, interestingly, I think a woman came back here with him. Women loved him. That was a fact about Ed. Women loved him. Which they do some certain guys, they really, I don't know, they're just attracted to certain guys. And Ed was one of those. What did he do?
Well, you know, one question that I was going to ask was, were you aware of any of the issues or the struggles that Ed had with mental illness? How early on were you aware of any of that?
Of what?
Of Ed's sort of struggles with mental illness.
The demons.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would, more than once he ended up in Deer Lodge, but Warm Springs Mental Institution several times. And so that Ed would, in his strange enthusiasm, go crazy for a while, which he did. And then he'd get better, and then he'd get out.
Mm-hmm.
And then his actions would... Oh, I don't know. Normal type people would think, oh boy, that guy is really weird, and they were kind of afraid of him, you know.
Yeah, I think he figured that was one of the reasons why that the university system wouldn't ever touch him again after a few of those trips to Warm Springs.
Right.
They would never take a chance.
So he was, in fact, you know, a harmless human being, but strange, according to the standards of normalcy. And so it went along.
Were you a fan of his poetry?
Was I?
Yeah. Of his poetry?
No, I just recognize it as really good, the best probably around, the best around. No fan. So what else? Butte was, and he worked there in the mines very briefly for a while when he was a younger guy.
His family owned a mine up at Corbin.
Uh-huh.
And I know he worked that for off and on for several years.
God. So that, that was ingrained in him, being a miner, which he was, and then the whole damn city of Butte, Montana, which is a mining town, if there ever was one.
Did you never work together as teachers at any... stretch, or were never around each other in the classroom?
More. We used to always have a coffee clatch or whatever, you know, in that room at the end of the hall, sit down there, and all of us would sit down there, including Ed, including me, and talk. and BS about teaching and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And what years was that?
That must have been that was in the 70s. I do believe. I came here in 62. I don't know what year he came.
I think in the mid-60s, 64, yes. 65, somewhere yes. like that.
And the place really blew up in 67 and 68. I was very much involved myself in the revolution, which... So I decided we should form. We would meet in Liberal Arts 11, that room downstairs there. And I decided we should take a name, the group, and I said it should be the Committee for Intelligent Action, the CIA. And so we were the CIA.
Was Ed a part of that?
He must have been. I don't remember exactly what he was doing. But reading his poetry, some very good readings, and keeping the women at bay. Women, as I said, were very much attracted to Ed.
Yeah.
As they are to such a guy.
I remember Ed telling me a story about him and... Well, he was at a party after a reading that Robert Bly gave.
Yes.
Were you there?
Yes.
At that reading?
Yes.
Can you describe what you remember happening
at that Bly. Party? Let's see. Robert Bly, he was an interesting character, kind of a nutcase Bly. So, like typically of many... academically related activities. It was bizarre, and I don't remember what the hell happened, what Bly did. What did Bly do? What did Ed ever say to
yeah,
you?
Yeah, he and Hugo got into began as sort of a discussion about war.
Uh-huh.
And Bly's position was pretty strong, anti-war position.
Yes.
And Hugo, of course, the
ex-bombardier.
Ex-bombardier, the World War II veteran, I'm sure maintained the position that there were certain necessary, war was a necessary reaction in certain situations, maybe, or something along those lines.
Yes.
And maybe even put it to Hugo that, or Hugo may have put it to Bly that since he was not involved, how could he, take that position or something?
Right.
And so they had this, they were bantering back and forth and provoking each other, and Bly took one of Hugo's coveted jazz records and threw it against the wall. Ooh. And broke it. And stormed out of the room.
Who did that, Bly?
Bly did that, yeah. And left. And Ed told me that he followed him. That his anti-war, ethic was so strong at that point. And I'm guessing here, but we're all human beings. Bly was a hot commodity in the poetry world and a name. And I think Ed was interested. He told me he was interested in really getting to know Bly, and I think he kind of saw it as an opportunity too, to follow Bly and really get a chance to talk to him.
What happened? Did he say?
He said he walked with him. They walked around campus for a while, and Ed tried to explain Hugo's position or whatever, and Bly was not having a lot of it, I think, is the way Ed put it, but appreciated the company of Ed walking with him, and but I think Bly was pissed off, and Ed didn't seem to recall anything, you know, truly significant other than the fact that he had was able to take a walk with Robert Bly and talk right. to him a little bit, you know.
Right. Well, the yeah, there was a Hugo cult here. Which was a pain in the ass, you know. Because Dick was what? Strange poet. Like he couldn't quite make sense. He didn't have enough reason.
Yeah.
Which even a poet needs.
Yeah.
Striking lines from a very sad setting there on the coast where everything was dying off. Logging was dying, and the fishing was dying, and because we'd been raping the land for so long, it was just a shithouse over there on the coast. A place restored to its true dignity by David James Duncan, The River Hoy. That's a good book. And he's a local now, too. Duncan's a local. I don't know where he lives. Probably up the Rattlesnake.
Yeah, something. I don't know where he lives exactly. Now, you know, I you mentioned earlier that you thought that Ed's poetry, even though you said you weren't necessarily a fan, but you thought that it was his. Some of the best poetry that was being written at the time.
Yes.
And so in regard to that comment about you felt like Hugo's poems weren't quite together in ways that you didn't think, I don't want to paraphrase you, but mm-hmm. do you think Ed's were?
I think they were, yeah.
Do you think they made sense in a way that maybe Hugo's
poems
didn't?
Yeah, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did. They came out of a tradition of miners and those working men and a place, Butte, Montana.
Right.
Which is a place I would hate to live in. But there it is.
Yeah, and well, you know, and also, I mean, that was part of the... I think popularity of Hugo for people like Ed and Jim Welch and other people who had grown up in this state in working class, more sort of lower class, mm-hmm. lower middle class mm-hmm. Environments. They were attracted to Hugo because he did write from that kind of that white center middle class. Lower class, working class mentality.
True.
But I agree with you in that I think that he was much more of a quote poet unquote in terms of the language in
yes.
Hugo's poems was
yes.
And it did it would sometimes become convoluted to the point of mystery to where it really wasn't it wasn't holding the center wasn't holding or you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean. I don't think Ed ever lost me that way.
Turning and turning in the widening gyre. The falcon does not hear something, the falconer. Yeah. And so Ed then he went along and what? He taught, he wrote poetry, he had several different women in his life.
Did you know any of the women in his life?
Oh, I know. What's her name now? She's helped us out a lot.
Mary Laura.
Mary.
Mary Laura, yeah. Or Lori.
Lori, I knew her very well, sure. They lived in the brick house across from the Missoulian there, where they were living at that time. And she knew my wife quite well. And then what did she do? She was a secretary at the law school for a while.
Yeah.
And she deserved better than what we gave her, this culture of poets.
So Ed and were you around for the end of their marriage? Did you know anything about how any of that
developed? I didn't see it in any way that indicated a narrative that I knew much about. No.
I have a question for you. And were you aware of? Were you ever aware of the fact that, I mean, sometimes there are sort of secrets, you might say, that exist in people's lives, and one of the ones that I've, you know, stumbled upon here in meeting friends and family of Ed's is that Ed's father was not his father.
No, I didn't know that.
Did you not know that?
No.
Okay, yeah, I wondered if maybe you did or you didn't. I know that, you know, it was one of those things that, you know, Ed could keep a secret. I mean, he could keep certain information very, very close. He was guarded in a lot of ways, I think.
In what sense was he not his father? He was an adoptee?
Well,
adopter?
No, Ed's mother became pregnant by another guy from Butte, a friend of the family, another one of the bootlegging gang, a part of the Thin Air Gang, which is the fictional name of the bootleggers that the Leahys and the Shutes I remember what the other family name was, but a guy by the name of Earl McCarthy,
yeah,
was actually Ed's father, but it was just kept secret, and so Ed never knew his entire life until after his father died. And that was he was in Missoula, in school in Missoula in the mid 60s, probably 66, 67, something like that. And when his father died, that's when his mother told him. And
his real father died
when Ed Leahy Sr. Ed Leahy, who he thought was his father, when he died, then Ed's mother, Frances, told Ed that Ed, who had just passed away, wasn't Eddie's father. That Eddie's father was actually a guy named Earl McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, at first Ed didn't know what to make of it, and you know, just absolutely shocked.
Yeah.
You know, you're 30 years old and your father dies and your mother tells you that. And he did go to Butte, I guess, to confirm that. And Earl McCarthy confirmed that, yeah, that was the truth, and that it was just a family secret that was kept from Ed and most other people, although there were people that knew. And I just was curious as if you might have been someone who found out about that at some time or knew about that.
Part of all the junk that goes with being human, as Snyder said.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, surprise.
The junk. Think of this. Here's what really happened. Oh, no shit.
Exactly.
Awful, awful, awful. Or not awful, they're just run-of-the-mill every day.
Yeah.
One mistake after another.
Yeah.
So Ed, yeah, I was really, really, really surprised and happy to read his novel because it's a good novel.
Right.
And so he was a writer. Everything he wrote poetry, then he wrote a novel. And I guess another one he's got, or he had before he died.
Right.
I don't know what's going to happen to that one.
Hopefully it'll see the light of day. Did you know anything about Ed's relationship with Leslie Fiedler, or did you know Fiedler well?
With Fiedler? I knew Fiedler quite well, and Ed was an admirer of and a friend of Leslie Fiedler, and continued a correspondence with him. It'd be interesting to find those letters when Fiedler went to Buffalo.
Yeah.
And so Ed Yeah, he really, well, he saw in Fiedler the genius that was there. Fiedler was the 50-minute man. You give him 50 minutes and he'd give you the history of English literature. Jesus, an amazing lecturer and so forth. And a real cocksucker. He's always after everybody else's wife, you know, and that kind of guy. Fiedler, and so, yeah, and I knew Leslie quite well, and taught with him in that department in the humanities program.
Yeah, okay.
For several years. And his wife and his kids. His wife occasionally comes around Missoula still. She's alive. And an old hag by now. Strange character. And a very bright, brilliant woman, really, his wife.
You mentioned that Ed was popular with the ladies.
Yes.
And others people have told me that too. And I heard a story here not too long ago that, did you know anything about a...
Hi.
Things started again. There we go. Well, I was... Were you aware of the fact that Ed had... he was married to Mary Lore, and he was having an affair with Lee Nye's wife, I believe, or ex-wife?
No, I didn't know that he was having an affair with her. I know her.
Yeah.
She's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Lived down in Lolo. Taught in Lolo, I think.
This was a wife before... You're referring to Jean?
Yeah.
Down in Lolo?
Yeah.
Now, this was a woman that Lee Nye was married to before Jean, I guess.
I guess. I don't even know if I knew her.
No, okay. It's interesting to, you know, I mean, that whole, and it's, you know, it's not necessarily a generational thing, but, it, you know, Hugo was famous for that. Many of his female... students, you know, he was surrounded by all these male proteges and whatnot, but a lot of his female students commented on, you know, sometimes his behavior and
what did he do? Couldn't resist patting a little butt now and then. Yeah, terrific. What are you supposed to do?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm, you know,
it's up to the women. They got to figure it out. And they, I'm sure they're quite aware of to what extent their charms get us going. Yeah. So, yeah, there's... But that's true about... Ed was very close to Leslie Fiedler and wrote him. They had a correspondence going after he left and went to Buffalo that late.
Yeah, I found some envelopes. I found one letter, but more than one envelope, but not more than one letter.
Mm-hmm.
And but they're just, I mean, you know, by the time Ed had moved into the village healthcare facility where you didn't take really anything with you.
Yes.
And everybody had to get rid of all of his belongings and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, he had moved, and I mean, I remember at one point him telling me that he had lost more poems than he had ever collected.
Right.
You know, because he just moved and lost stuff and misplaced stuff.
Yeah, and then he went to Village Healthcare. It's a good place. They look after people quite well and looked after him, although he had it too easy, and then he got fatter and fatter when he was over there. He got really fat.
Oh, boy.
And just would lie in bed all the damn time. And no good, very bad for him. And I don't think he wasn't writing shit there at the end.
No, not to speak of. So we talked about, you know, Ed, in terms of war and whatnot. How about, you know, what do you know of Ed's religious background? I mean, I know that you were both into the Buddhist tradition to an extent, and I don't know how much or how in-depth that was.
All the way for me.
Yeah.
I studied, practiced Buddhism and studied Buddhism from 1972, and I still do it today. Ed, he's not a religious man. He was a man of the beauty of words, somehow his religion, I think. And and everybody claims some connection to Zen. Oh, oh, ha, 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 bullshit. People don't have the least idea. You want to go sit for 7 days and don't move a muscle and look at the wall and see what happens then. How you, boy, is it scary.
As far as you know, Ed never practiced any of that kind of long-term.
As far as I know, but you know, yeah. He had his secrets of what he was doing at another level away from the society and so forth. Hmm. I don't know. I just kind of doubt it. I think he's too, I don't know, strongly out. He needs people. He needed people so badly to, and some whatever.
It was interesting at the toward the end, toward the end of his life, or just before he went to into the village healthcare, and the reason he went to the village healthcare was he really was unable to sort of take care of himself at that point. You know,
yes,
he needed some assistance, and so and it was mainly mental health issues is what was the reason for that.
Yeah.
But he became a very interested in Catholicism for about 6 months prior to moving into the healthcare, the village.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I wonder if he went to Mass. Over to see Hogan there at the University Catholic Church.
I don't know if he did at some point in the past. I know a Catholic nun by the name of Sister Kathleen used to kind of come visit him, and I think they brought Mass to him a couple of times, sort of, you know. And I don't know if it was Father Hogan that came, or it may not have been by that time.
Hogan's retired now, but he's a hell of a good guy. Jesus, good man. Did you see, you saw Ed's apartment after he left us?
Yeah. I cleaned it up, moved it.
You cleaned it?
Well, yeah. I
had never seen such a mess in my life. Absolute mess. He hadn't touched anything.
Yeah. No.
To
yeah.
clean it in months. And it was a comic. Jesus Christ, what a place. Unbelievable. The worst looking living quarters I'd ever seen in my life.
Yeah, no, I don't think he ever threw anything away other than maybe an empty can that he opened up to eat something out of, and that wound up in the garbage.
Right.
Sometimes those were sitting around the room too.
Yes, God, it was wonderful. Yeah.
And you'd go to visit him, and he'd be sitting there in his boxer shorts in the recliner. And
yes.
Somebody would come, he'd get up to answer the door.
God. Yeah, I remember that. I can't forget that.
And he usually just wore a shirt until it just almost became solid.
A shirt?
Yeah.
He'd wear one?
Well, you know, the food and stuff would fall and collect, and it would make kind of a hard bib on the front of it.
The poet. So what was he? A poet is what he was. More than anything else, he was a poet, and he wrote some very good ones, and you're thinking maybe there are others around. Where the hell are they?
I don't know. I mean, I think there are. We'll find some as time goes on, and they appear from other people that were sent in letters, maybe, that Ed might have wrote, you know, over the years to somebody, and included a poem, and a few will turn up like that. I found in just piles that I cleaned up about 40.
40 poems?
That had never been published, yeah.
Where were they?
Papers? I had just, like you said, you know, taken handfuls of papers and stuff and put them in boxes, and then finally got around to going through the boxes and sorting through things, and we're just discovering these poems. And I kept setting them aside, and then I kept, you know, checking back, thinking, well, I've never seen or heard of that. And I'd go back to the books and go through, and no recollection of that ever appearing anywhere. Some of them were probably didn't ever appear because he didn't think they were his best work. And some of them maybe didn't appear because maybe he was too close to them, or he thought that maybe they would expose his life or his family in ways that he maybe didn't want to, you know.
Well, there's Ed. There he is.
There he is. Anything else?
Ed is gone.
Ed is gone.
And so we have this memory of him, and he has a place in the Poets Hall of Fame from Missoula.
He certainly does. Can't think of anything else that... I don't think I can... anything else comes to mind that any one sort of gathering or party or time that you were around Ed somewhere that something happened that just kind of stuck in your mind and it's kind of stuck with you, or it's when you think of him, if you do, that stands
out? Yeah, when
I
go back through it, not really, not the one that there were so many eccentrics in the English department. Ed even stood out.
Yeah.
In people's memory.
Okay.
No. I don't remember.
All right. Well, I mean, that's probably good. I appreciate it.
That's about what we've got. And I don't know as much about him as who might know more, who should be talked to.
Well, we're going to talk to a lot of people, I think. And
Rick DeMarinis was a great friend.
Right. Yes, I got a collection of letters that Rick sent to me that Ed had wrote to him, and I put those in the archive, and they are they're very revealing in the way that that you say things, especially in a letter, because a letter is, I think, is an art form in and of itself.
Yes.
But the way that you speak to one of your closest friends in a letter is a wonderful, honest monologue, you know.
Did you say Ed wrote?
Did I say Ed wrote?
You said Ed wrote.
Yeah, probably.
It's interesting. Yeah. Interesting colloquialism.
Yeah, get me talking for a while. All right, I'm going to stop this goddamn thing.
Yeah.
All right.